This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
Former FBI Director James Comey testifies before the Senate. We have that now on The Patriot Preacher. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to The Patriot Preacher, covering the news from a Christian perspective. Glad to be with each and every one of you on this Thursday morning. Welcome to the program. I am Caleb Colquitt, your humble host. Glad to be with you on this morning. We have a lot to cover today. The former FBI director who was fired by the President of the United States, Director James Comey, testifies. We're trying to bring coverage up now, so let's give it just a second. We should have coverage for you, so we're going to go live to that. He is testifying right now as to whether or not there was Trump interfering with the investigation. It looks like we have the feed now, so let's go there live now.
2016 elections. We also have a unified bipartisan approach to what is a highly charged partisan issue. Russian activities during 2016 election may have been aimed at one party's candidate, but as my colleague Senator Rubio says frequently, in 2018 and 2020, it could be aimed at anyone at home or abroad. My colleague Senator Warner and I have worked to stay in lockstep on this investigation. We've had our differences on approach at times, but I've constantly stressed that we need to be a team, and I think Senator Warner agrees with me. We must keep these questions above politics and partisanship. It's too important to be tainted by anyone trying to score political points. With that, again, I welcome you, Director, and I turn to the Vice Chairman for any comments he might have.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And let me start by, again, absolutely thanking all the members of the committee for the seriousness in which they've taken on this task. Mr. Comey, thank you for agreeing to come testify as part of this committee's investigation into Russia. I realize that this hearing has been obviously the focus of a lot of Washington in the last few days. But the truth is, many Americans who may be tuning in today probably haven't focused on every twist and turn of the investigation. So I'd like to briefly describe, at least from this senator's standpoint, what we already know and what we're still investigating. To be clear, this investigation is not about relitigating the election. It's not about who won or lost, and it sure as heck is not about Democrats versus Republicans. We're here because a foreign adversary attacked us right here at home, plain and simple, not by guns or missiles, but by foreign operatives seeking to hijack our most important democratic process, our presidential election. Russian spies engaged in a series of online cyber raids and a broad campaign of disinformation, all ultimately aimed at sowing chaos to undermine public faith in our process, in our leadership, and ultimately in ourselves. And that's not just this senator's opinion. It is the unanimous determination of the entire U.S. intelligence community. So we must find out the full story. What the Russians did, and candidly, as some other colleagues have mentioned, why they were so successful. And more importantly, we must determine the necessary steps to take to protect our democracy and ensure they can't do it again. Chairman mentioned elections in 2018 and 2020. In my home state of Virginia, we have elections this year in 2017. Simply put, we cannot let anything or anyone prevent us from getting to the bottom of this. Now, Mr. Comey, let me say at the outset, we haven't always agreed on every issue. In fact, I've occasionally questioned some of the actions you've taken. But I've never had any reason to question your integrity, your expertise, or your intelligence. You've been a straight shooter with this committee and have been willing to speak truth to power, even at the risk of your own career, which makes the way in which you were fired by the president ultimately shocking. Recall we began this entire process with the president and his staff first denying that the Russians were ever involved and then falsely claiming that no one from his team was ever in touch with any Russians. We know that's just not the truth. Numerous Trump associates had undisclosed contacts with Russians before and after the election, including the president's attorney general, his former national security advisor, and his current senior advisor, Mr. Kushner. That doesn't even begin to count the host of additional campaign associates and advisors who've also been caught up in this massive web. We saw Mr. Trump's campaign manager, Mr. Manafort, forced to step down over ties to Russian-backed entities. The national security advisor, General Flynn, had to resign over his lies about engagements with the Russians. And we saw the candidate himself express an odd and unexplained affection for the Russian dictator while calling for the hacking of his opponent.
So now we're censoring social media, apparently.
Enough, in fact, that then-Director Comey publicly acknowledged that he was leading an investigation into those links between Mr. Trump's campaign and the Russian government. As the director of the FBI, Mr. Comey was ultimately responsible for conducting that investigation, which might explain why you're sitting now as a private citizen. What we didn't know was at the same time that this investigation was proceeding, the president himself appears to have been engaged in an effort to influence or at least co-opt the director of the FBI. The testimony that Mr. Comey has submitted for today's hearing is very disturbing. For example, on January 27th, after summoning Director Comey to dinner, the president appears to have threatened the director's job while telling him, quote, I need loyalty. I expect loyalty. At a later meeting on February 14th, the president asked the attorney general to leave the Oval Office so that he could privately ask Director Comey, again, quote, to see way clear to letting Flynn go. That is a statement that Director Comey interpreted as a request that he drop the investigation connected to General Flynn's false statements. Think about it. The President of the United States asking the FBI director to drop an ongoing investigation. And after that, the President called the FBI director on two additional occasions, March 30th and April 11th, and asked him again, quote, to lift the cloud on the Russia investigation. Now, Director Comey denied each of these improper requests. The loyalty pledge, the admonition to drop the Flynn investigation, the request to lift the cloud on the Russia investigation. Of course, after his refusals, Director Comey was fired. The initial explanation for the firing didn't pass any smell test. Somehow, Director Comey was fired because he didn't treat Hillary Clinton appropriately. Of course, that explanation lasted about a day because the president himself then made very clear that he was thinking about Russia when he decided to fire Director Comey.
Shockingly, don't remember that.
Reports suggest that the president admitted as much in an Oval Office meeting with the Russians the day after Director Comey was fired. Disparaging our country's top law enforcement official as a quote-unquote nut job, the president allegedly suggested that his firing relieved great pressure on his feelings about Russia. This is not happening in isolation. At the same time the president was engaged in these efforts with Director Comey, he was also, at least allegedly, asking senior leaders of the intelligence community to downplay the Russian investigation or to intervene with the director. Yesterday, we had DNI Director Coates and NSA Director Admiral Rogers, who were offered a number of opportunities to flatly deny those press reports. They expressed their opinions, but they did not take that opportunity to deny those reports. They did not take advantage of that opportunity. In my belief, that's not how the President of the United States should behave. Regardless of the outcome of our investigation into the Russia links, Director Comey's firing and his testimony raise separate and troubling questions that we must get to the bottom of. Again, as I said at the outset, I've seen firsthand how seriously...
All right, looks like he's closing down his statement now.
He's taking his work.
So that we can get James Comey's opening statement, we're going to go ahead and take a break right now. So hopefully when we come back from that, we'll have James Comey. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Former FBI Director James Comey has just started his testimony. He's testifying before the Senate now, so we go to him now.
Better. And I say help because I did nothing alone at the FBI. There are no indispensable people at the FBI. The organization's great strength is that its values and abilities run deep and wide. The FBI will be fine without me. The FBI's mission will be relentlessly pursued by its people, and that mission is to protect the American people and uphold the Constitution of the United States. I will deeply miss being part of that mission, but this organization and its mission will go on long beyond me and long beyond any particular administration. I have a message before I close for my former colleagues of the FBI. But at first, I want the American people to know this truth. The FBI is honest. The FBI is strong. And the FBI is and always will be independent. And now to my former colleagues, if I may. I am so sorry that I didn't get the chance to say goodbye to you properly. It was the honor of my life to serve beside you, to be part of the FBI family, and I will miss it for the rest of my life. Thank you for standing watch. Thank you for doing so much good for this country. Do that good as long as ever you can. And senators, I look forward to your questions.
Director, thank you for that testimony, both oral and the written testimony that you provided to the committee yesterday and made public to the American people. Chair would recognize himself first for 12 minutes, vice chair for 12 minutes based upon the agreement we have. Director, did the special counsel's office review and or edit your written testimony?
No.
Do you have any doubt that Russia attempted to interfere in the 2016 elections?
None.
Do you have any doubt?
Keep in mind, he said
the
attempted.
Russian government was behind the intrusions in the DNC and the DCCC systems and the subsequent leaks of that information?
No, no doubt.
Do you have any doubt that the Russian government was behind the cyber intrusion into state voter files?
No.
Do you have any doubt that officials of the Russian government were fully aware of these activities?
No doubt.
Are you confident that no votes cast in the 2016 presidential election were altered?
I'm confident. By the time when I left as director, I'd seen no indication of that whatsoever.
Director Comey,
so there you have it, an attempt but a failed attempt.
The President at any time ask you to stop the FBI investigation into Russian involvement in the 2016 U.S. elections?
Not to my understanding, no.
Did any individual working for this administration, including the Justice Department, ask you to stop the Russian investigation?
No.
Director, when the President requested that you, and I quote, let Flynn go, General Flynn had an unreported contact with the Russians, which is an offense. And if press accounts are right, there might have been discrepancies between facts and his FBI testimony. In your estimation, was General Flynn at that time in serious legal jeopardy? And in addition to that, do you sense that the President was trying to obstruct justice or just seek for a way for Mike Flynn to save face, given he had already been fired?
Well, General Flynn at that point in time was in legal jeopardy. There was an open FBI criminal investigation of his statements in connection with the Russian contacts and the contacts themselves. And so that was my assessment at the time. I don't think it's for me to say whether the conversation I had with the President was an effort to obstruct. I took it as a very disturbing thing, very concerning, but that's a conclusion I'm sure the special counsel will work towards to try and understand what the intention was there and whether that's an offense.
Director, is it possible that as part of this FBI investigation, the FBI could find evidence of criminality that is not tied to the 2016 elections, possible collusion, or coordination with Russians?
Sure.
So there could be something that just fits a criminal aspect to this that doesn't have anything to do with the 2016 election cycle.
Correct. In any complex investigation, when you start turning over rocks, sometimes you find things that are unrelated to the primary investigation that are criminal in nature.
Director Crummey, you have been criticized publicly for the decision to present your findings on the email investigation directly to the American people. Have you learned anything since that time that would have changed what you said or how you chose to inform the American people?
Honestly, no. I mean, it caused a whole lot of personal pain for me, but as I look back, given what I knew at the time and even what I've learned since, I think it was the best way to try and protect the justice institution, including the FBI.
In the public domain is this question of the Steele dossier, a document that has been around now for over a year. I'm not sure when the FBI first took possession of it, but the media had it before you had it and we had it. At the time of your departure from the FBI, was the FBI able to confirm any criminal allegations contained in the Steele document?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that's a question I can answer in an open setting because it goes into the details of the investigation.
Director, the term we hear most often is collusion. When people are describing possible links between Americans and Russian government entities related to the interference in our election, would you say that it's normal for foreign governments to reach out to members of an incoming administration?
Yes.
At what point does the normal contact cross the line into an attempt to recruit agents or influence or spies?
Difficult to say in the abstract. It depends upon the context, whether there's an effort to keep it covert, or what the nature of the requests made of the American by the foreign government are. It's a judgment call based on a whole lot of facts.
At what point would that recruitment become a counterintelligence threat to our country?
Again, difficult to answer in the abstract, but when a foreign power is using especially coercion or some sort of pressure to try and co-opt an American, especially a government official, to act on its behalf, that's a serious concern to the FBI and at the heart of the FBI's counterintelligence mission.
So if you've got a 36-page document of specific claims that are out there.
All right, everybody, we've got just a few seconds before we go to a hard break, so we do have to take this break right now, but we'll be back with more on James Comey in just one moment here on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Welcome back. Former FBI Director James Comey is now testifying before the Senate. He's answering questions in response to his testimony. What they're talking about right now is the Russia hacks into the DNC. So we go back to him right now.
FBI and the Justice Department.
Were there other things that contributed to that that you can describe in an open session?
There were other things that contributed to that. But one significant item I can't. I know the committee's been briefed on. There's been some public accounts of it, which are nonsense, but I understand the committee's been briefed on the classified facts. Probably the only other consideration that I guess I can talk about in open setting is that at one point the Attorney General had directed me not to call it an investigation, but instead to call it a matter, which confused me and concerned me. But that was one of the bricks in the load that led me to conclude I have to step away from the department if we're to close this case credibly.
He's talking about Loretta Lynch there, by the way.
Question. You're not only a seasoned prosecutor, you've led the FBI for years. You understand the investigative process. You've worked with this committee closely, and we're grateful to you because I think we've mutually built trust. in what your organization does and what we do. Is there any doubt in your mind that this committee can carry out its oversight role in the 2016 Russian involvement in the elections in parallel with the now special counsel that's been set up?
No, no doubt. It can be done. It requires lots of conversations. But Bob Mueller is one of this country's great, great pros, and I'm sure you all will be able to work it out with him to run it in parallel.
I want to thank you once again. I want to turn to the Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, Director Comey, thank you for your service. And your comments to your FBI family, I know, were heartfelt. Know that even though there are some in the administration who have tried to smear your reputation, you had Acting Director McCabe in public testimony a few weeks back and in public testimony yesterday reaffirm that the vast majority of the FBI community had great trust in your leadership and obviously trust in your integrity. I want to go through a number of the meetings that you referenced in your testimony. And let's start with the January 6th meeting in Trump Tower, where you went up with a series of officials to brief the president-elect on the Russia investigation. My understanding is you remained afterwards to brief him on, again, quote, some personally sensitive aspects of the information you relayed. Now, you said after that briefing, you felt compelled to document that conversation, that you actually started documenting it as soon as you got into the car. Now, you've had extensive experience at the Department of Justice and at the FBI. You've worked under presidents of both parties. What was it about that meeting that led you to determine that you needed to start putting down a written record?
A combination of things. I think the circumstances, the subject matter, and the person I was interacting with. Circumstances first, I was alone with the President of the United States, or the President-elect, soon to be President. The subject matter, I was talking about matters that touch on the FBI's core responsibility and that relate to the President-elect personally. And then the nature of the person. I was honestly concerned that he might lie about the nature of our meeting, and so I thought it really important to document. That combination of things I'd never experienced before, but it led me to believe I got to write it down, and I got to write it down in a very detailed way.
I think that's a very important statement you just made. And my understanding is that then, again, unlike your dealings with presidents of either parties in your past experience, in every subsequent meeting or conversation with this president, you created a written record. Did you feel that you needed to create this written record of these memos because they might need to be relied on at some future date?
Sure. I created records after conversations, and I think I did it after each of our nine conversations. If I didn't, I did it for nearly all of them, especially the ones that were substantive. I knew that there might come a day when I would need a record of what had happened, not just to defend myself, but to defend the FBI and our integrity as an institution and the independence of our investigative function. That's what made this so difficult, is it was a combination of circumstances, subject matter, and the particular person.
And so in all your experience, this was the only president that you felt like in every meeting you needed to document, because at some point, using your words, he might put out a non-truthful representation of that meeting.
Now, that's right, Senator. And I, as I said in my written testimony, as FBI director, I interacted with President Obama, and I spoke only twice in 3 years and didn't document it. When I was Deputy Attorney General, I had one one-on-one meeting with President Bush about a very important and difficult national security matter. I didn't write a memo documenting that conversation either. Sent a quick email to my staff to let them know there was something going on. But I didn't feel with President Bush the need to document it in that way. Again, because the combination of those factors just wasn't present with either President Bush or President Obama.
I think that is very significant. I think others will probably question that. Now, the chairman and I have requested those memos. It is our hope that the FBI will get this committee access to those memos so that, again, we can read that contemporaneous rendition so that we've got your side of the story. Now, I know members have said and press have said that if you were a great deal has been made of whether the president, you are asked to, in effect, indicate whether the president was the subject of any investigation. And my understanding is prior to your meeting on January 6th, you discussed with your leadership team whether or not you should be prepared to assure then-President-elect Trump that the FBI was not investigating him personally. Now, my understanding is your leadership team agreed with that, but was that a unanimous decision? Was there any debate about that?
It wasn't unanimous. One of the members of the leadership team had a view that although it was technically true, we did not have a counterintelligence file case open on then-President-elect Trump. His concern was, because we're looking at the potential, again, that's the subject of the investigation, coordination between the campaign and Russia, because it was President Trump, President-elect Trump's campaign, this person's view was inevitably his behavior, his conduct, will fall within the scope of that work, and so he was reluctant to make the statement that I made. I disagreed. I thought it was fair to say what was literally true. There is not a counterintelligence investigation of Mr. Trump, and I decided in the moment to say it, given the nature of our conversation.
At that moment in time, did you ever revisit that as in these subsequent sessions?
With the FBI leadership team? Sure. The leader had that view. It didn't change. His view was still that it was probably, although literally true, his concern was it could be misleading because the nature of the investigation was such that it might well touch, obviously it would touch the campaign, and the person at the head of the campaign would be the candidate. And so that was his view throughout.
Let me move to the January 27th dinner, where you said, quote, the president began by asking me whether I wanted to stay on as FBI director. He also indicated that lots of people, again, your words, wanted the job. You go on to say that the dinner itself was seemingly an effort to, quote, have you ask him for your job and create some sort of, quote, unquote, patronage relationship. The president seems, from my reading of your memo, to be holding your job or your possibility of continuing in your job over your head in a fairly direct way. What was your impression, and what did you mean by this notion of a patronage relationship?
Well, my impression, and again, it's my impression, I could always be wrong, but my common sense told me that what was going on is either he had concluded or someone had told him that you've already asked Comey to stay, and you didn't get anything for it, and that the dinner was an effort to build a relationship, in fact, he asked specifically, of loyalty in the context of asking me to stay. And as I said, what was odd about that is we'd already talked twice about it by that point, and he'd said, I very much hope you'll stay. I hope you'll stay. In fact, I just remembered sitting here, a third one, when you've seen the picture of me walking across the blue room, what the president whispered in my ear was, I really look forward to working with you. So after those encounters...
And that was just a few days before you were fired.
Yeah, that was on the Sunday after the inauguration. The next Friday, I have dinner, and the president begins by wanting to talk about my job. And so I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, three times you've already asked me to stay or talked about me staying. My common sense, again, I could be wrong, but my common sense told me what's going on here is he's looking to get something in exchange for granting my request to stay in the job.
Again, we all understand, I was a governor, I had people work for me, but this constant request, and again, quoting you, him saying that he... Despite you explaining your independence, he kept coming back to, I need loyalty, I expect loyalty. Had you ever had any of those kind of requests before from anyone else you'd worked for in the government?
No. And what made me uneasy was, I'm, at that point, the director of the FBI. The reason that Congress created a 10-year term is so that the director is not feeling as if they're serving with political loyalty owed to any particular person. The Statue of Justice has a blindfold on because you're not supposed to be peeking out to see whether your patron is pleased or not with what you're doing. It should be about the facts and the law. That's why I became FBI director, to be in that kind of position. So that's why it was so uneasy.
Well, let me move on. My time's running out. February 14th, again, it seems a bit strange. You were in a meeting, and your direct superior, the Attorney General, was in that meeting as well, yet the president asked everyone to leave, including the Attorney General to leave, before he brought up the matter of General Flynn. What was your impression of that type of action? Have you ever seen anything like that before?
No. My impression was something big is about to happen. I need to remember every single word that is spoken. And again, I could be wrong. I'm 56 years old. I've been seen a few things. My sense was the Attorney General knew he shouldn't be leaving, which is why he was lingering. And I don't know Mr. Kushner well, but I think he picked up on the same thing. And so I knew something was about to happen that I needed to pay very close attention to.
And Comey's spider senses were tingling.
In the memo that you wrote after this February 14th pull-aside, you made clear that you wrote that memo in a way that was unclassified. If you affirmatively made the decision to write a memo that was unclassified, was that because you felt at some point the facts of that meeting would have to come clean and come clear and actually be able to be cleared in a way that could be shared with the American people?
Well, I remember thinking this is a very disturbing development, really important to our work. I need to document it and preserve it in a way, and this committee gets this, but sometimes when things are classified, it tangles them up. It's hard
Amen.
To share it within an investigative team. You have to be very careful about how you handle it for good reason. So my thinking was, if I write it in such a way that I don't include anything that would trigger a classification, that'll make it easier for us to discuss within the FBI and the government.
Smart move.
To hold on to it in a way that makes it accessible to us.
Well, again, it's our hope, particularly since you...
All right, it looks like the Senator Warner there is winding down his questioning, and it looks like he's getting to some of his less important questions, so this is probably a good time to take a break. We're going to go ahead and take a brief break here on The Patriot Preacher. We'll be right back with more with Director James Comey.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. Glad to be with you. The Patriot Preacher is back with the testimony of James Comey this morning. They have switched gears. It looks like we have, that's Republican Senator from Idaho. I believe his name is James Risch, so he's questioning Comey right now. We go straight back to that.
I do. It was about allegedly extensive electronic surveillance.
Correct.
Communications.
Yes. And that upset you to the point where you actually went out and surveyed the intelligence community to see whether you were missing something in that. Is that correct?
That's correct. I want to be careful in open setting.
I'm not going to go any further than that.
Okay.
So thank you. In addition to that, after that, you sought out both Republican and Democrat senators to tell them that, hey, I don't know where this is coming from, but this is not the case. This is not factual. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Okay. So again, so the American people can understand this, that report by the New York Times was not true. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, in the main, it was not true. And again, all of you know this, maybe the American people don't. The challenge, and I'm not picking on reporters, about writing stories about classified information is the people talking about it often don't really know what's going on, and those of us who actually know what's going on are not talking about it. And we don't call the press to say, hey, you got that thing wrong about this sensitive topic. We just have to leave it there. I mentioned to the chairman the nonsense around what influenced me to make the July 5th statement. Nonsense, but I can't go explaining how it's nonsense.
Thank you. All right, so those three things we now know regarding the
action. That's why covering politics is frustrating.
Investigation and the collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians. I want to drill right down, as my time is limited, to the most recent dust-up regarding allegations that the President of the United States obstructed justice. And, boy, you nailed this down on page 5, paragraph 3. You put this in quotes. Words matter. You wrote down the words so we can all have the words in front of us now. There's 28 words there that are in quotes, and it says, quote, I hope, this is the President speaking, I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He is a good guy. I hope you can let this go. Now, those are his exact words. Is that correct?
Correct.
And you wrote them here and you put them in quotes?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for that. He did not direct you to let it go.
Not in his words, no.
He did not order you to let it go.
Again, those words are not an order.
No. He said, I hope. Now, like me, you probably did hundreds of cases, maybe thousands of cases, charging people with criminal offenses. And, of course, you have knowledge of the thousands of cases out there that where people have been charged. Do you know of any case where a person has been charged for obstruction of justice, or for that matter, any other criminal offense, where this they said or thought they hoped for an outcome?
I don't know well enough to answer. And the reason I keep saying his words is I took it as a direction.
Right.
I mean, this is the President of the United States with me alone saying, I hope this. I took it as this is what he wants me to do. Now, I didn't obey that, but that's the way I took it.
You may have taken it as a direction, but that's not what he said.
Correct.
He said, I hope.
Those are exact words. Okay. Correct.
You don't know of anyone that's ever been charged for hoping something. Is that a fair statement?
I don't, as I sit here.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Feinstein.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, this ought to be good.
Mr. Comey, I just want you to know that I have great respect for you. Senator Cornyn and I sit on the Judiciary Committee, so we have occasion to have you before us. And I know that you're a man of strength and integrity.
Yeah, we don't need your resume, Feinstein.
I really regret the situation that we all find ourselves in. I just want to say that. Let me begin with one overarching question. Why do you believe you were fired?
I guess I don't know for sure. I believe I take the president at his word that I was fired because of the Russia investigation. Something about the way I was conducting it, the president felt created pressure on him that he wanted to relieve. Again, I didn't know that at the time, but I've watched his interview. I've read the press accounts of his conversations. So I take him at his word there. Now, look, I could be wrong. Maybe he's saying something that's not true, but I take him at his word, at least based on what I know now.
Talk for a moment about his request that you pledge loyalty and your response to that and what impact you believe that had.
I don't know for sure because I don't know the president well enough to read him well. I think it was, first of all, our relationship didn't get off to a great start given the conversation I had to have on January 6th. This was not, this didn't improve the relationship, because it was very, very awkward. He was asking for something, and I was refusing to give it. But again, I don't know him well enough to know how he reacted to that exactly.
Do you believe the Russia investigation played a role?
In why I was fired?
Yes.
Yes, because I've seen the president say so.
Let's go to the Flynn issue.
Which, by the way, proves what I've been saying for a long time. Trump is his own worst enemy when it comes to dealing with the press.
I hope you can see your way to letting Flynn go. He's a good guy. I hope you can let this go. But you also said in your written remarks, and I quote, that you had understood the president to be requesting that we drop any investigation of Flynn in connection with false statements about his conversations with the Russian ambassador in December, end quote. Please go into that with more detail.
Well, the context and the president's words are what led me to that conclusion. As I said in my statement, I could be wrong, but Flynn had been forced to resign the day before. And the controversy around General Flynn at that point in time was centered on whether he had lied to the vice president about the nature of his conversations with the Russians, whether he had been candid with others in the course of that. And so that happens on the day before. On the 14th, the president makes specific reference to that. And so that's why I understood him to be saying that what he wanted me to do was drop any investigation connected to Flynn's account of his conversations with the Russians.
Now, here's the question. You're big, you're strong. I know the Oval Office, and I know what happens to people when they walk in. There is a certain amount of intimidation. But why didn't you stop and say, Mr. President, this is wrong. I cannot discuss this with you.
It's a great question. Maybe if I were stronger, I would have. I was so stunned by the conversation that I just took it in. And the only thing I could think to say, because I was playing in my mind, because I could remember every word he said, I was playing in my mind, what should my response be? And that's why I very carefully chose the words. And look, I've seen the tweet about tapes. Lordy, I hope there are tapes. I remember saying, I agree he's a good guy as a way of saying I'm not agreeing with what you just asked me to do. Again, maybe other people would be stronger in that circumstance, but that's how I conducted myself. I hope I'll never have another opportunity. Maybe if I did it again, I would do it better.
You described two phone calls that you received from President Trump, one on March 30 and one on April 11, where he, quote, described the Russia investigation as a cloud that was impairing his ability, end quote, as president, and asked you, quote, to lift the cloud, end quote. How did you interpret that? And what did you believe he wanted you to do?
I interpreted that as he was frustrated that the Russia investigation was taking up so much time and energy. I think he meant of the executive branch, but in the public square in general, and it was making it difficult for him to focus on other priorities of his. But what he asked me was actually narrower.
I think Trump probably perceived that as asking for a personal favor.
But what I think he meant by the cloud was the entire investigation is taking up oxygen and making it hard for me to focus on the things I want to focus on. The ask was to get it out that I...
All right, guys, I hate that we have to take a break here, but we've got a hard break at the end of the hour coming up, so we're going to go just a second. We're going to take a break in the coverage. We'll be back with more of James Comey if it continues. We'll be back. Hour two coming up.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
We return to Capitol Hill and the Senate hearings with Director James Comey in just a moment. Hey, everybody. We are back trying to cover this. The testimony is going on. They have changed positions again. Right now, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida is questioning the FBI director, so we return to our live coverage right now.
What you already know, what you've told me three times, that I'm not personally under investigation.
Those are the three things he asked. Yes, sir.
You know, this investigation is full of leaks left and right. I mean, we've learned more from the newspapers sometimes than we do from our open hearings, for sure. You ever wonder why, of all the things in this investigation, the only thing that's never been leaked is the fact that the president was not personally under investigation, despite the fact that both Democrats and Republicans and the leadership of Congress knew that and have known that for weeks?
I don't know. I find matters that are briefed to the Gang of Eight are pretty tightly held, in my experience.
Finally, who are those senior leaders at the FBI that you shared these conversations with?
As I said in response to Senator Feinstein's question, Deputy Director, my Chief of Staff, General Counsel, the Deputy Director's Chief Counsel, and then more often than not, the number three person at the FBI, who's the Associate Deputy Director, and then quite often the head of the National Security Branch.
Senator White.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Comey, welcome.
Rubio's looking for the leaker.
You and I have had significant policy differences over the years, particularly protecting Americans' access to secure encryption. But I believe the timing of your firing stinks. And yesterday you put on the record testimony that demonstrates why the odor of presidential abuse of power is so strong. Now to my questions. In talking to Senator Warner about this dinner that you had with the president, I believe January 27th, all in one dinner, the president raised your job prospects, he asked for your loyalty, and denied allegations against him. All took place over one supper. Now, you told Senator Warner that the president was looking to, quote, get something. Looking back, did that dinner suggest that your job might be contingent on how you handled the investigation?
I don't know that I'd go that far. I got the sense my job would be contingent upon how he felt I conducted myself and whether I demonstrated loyalty. But I don't know whether I go so far as to connect it to
the
investigation.
You said the president was trying to create some sort of patronage relationship. In a patronage relationship, isn't the underling expected to behave in a manner consistent with the wishes of the boss?
Yes. Okay. Or at least consider how what you're doing will affect the boss as a significant consideration.
Let me turn to the Attorney General. In your statement, you said that you and the FBI leadership team decided not to discuss the president's actions with Attorney General Sessions, even though he had not recused himself. What was it about the Attorney General's own interactions with the Russians or his behavior with regard
this
to
guy's
the
a cartoon character
that would have led the entire
Senator
leadership
Wyden.
Of the FBI to make this decision?
Our judgment, as I recall, was that he was very close to and inevitably going to recuse himself for a variety of reasons. We also were aware of facts that I can't discuss in an open setting.
So in other words, Comey has a lot of faith in Jeff Sessions.
Engagement in a Russia-related investigation problematic, and so we were convinced, and in fact, I think we'd already heard that the career people were recommending that he recuse himself, that he was not going to be in contact with Russia-related matters much longer, and that turned out to be the case.
How would you characterize Attorney General Sessions' adherence to his recusal, in particular with regard to his involvement in your firing, which the president has acknowledged was because of the Russian investigation?
That's a question I can't answer. I think it's a reasonable question. If, as the president said, I was fired because of the Russia investigation, why was the attorney general involved in that chain? I don't know. And so I don't have an answer for the question.
Your testimony was that the president's request about Flynn could infect the investigation. Had the president got what he wanted and what he asked of you, what would have been the effect on the investigation?
Well, we would have closed any investigation of General Flynn in connection with his statements and statements about encounters with Russians in the late part of December. So we would have dropped an open criminal investigation.
So, in effect, when you talk about infecting the enterprise, you would have dropped something major that would have spoken to the overall ability of the American people to get the facts.
Correct. And as good as our people are, our judgment was we don't want them hearing that the President of the United States wants this to go away, because it might have an effect on their ability to be fair and impartial and aggressive.
Now, the acting Attorney General Yates found out that Michael Flynn could be blackmailed by the Russians, and she went immediately to warn the White House. Flynn is gone, but other individuals with contacts with the Russians are still in extremely important positions of power. Should the American people have the same...
You mean like the Secretary of State, whose job is to communicate with other countries? Yeah, I would say so.
The special counsel's investigation is very important. Understanding what efforts there were or are by the Russian government to influence our government is a critical part of the FBI's mission. So, and you've got the right person in Bob Mueller to lead it. So it's a very important piece of work.
Vice President Pence was the head of the transition. To your knowledge, was he aware of the concerns about Michael Flynn prior to or during General Flynn's tenure as National Security Advisor?
You're asking, including up to the time when Flynn was forced to resign? My understanding is that he was, and I'm trying to remember where I get that understanding from. I think from Acting Attorney General Yates.
So former Acting Attorney General Yates testified that concerns about General Flynn were discussed with the intelligence community. Would that have included anyone at the CIA or Dan Coats' office, the DNI?
I would assume yes.
Michael Flynn resigned 4 days after Attorney General Sessions was sworn in. Do you know if the Attorney General was aware of the concerns about Michael Flynn during that period?
I don't, as I sit here. I don't recall that he was. I could be wrong, but I don't remember that.
Good gracious, this guy is shooting in the dark.
And finally,
his questions don't make any sense.
You can give us some sense of who recommended your firing? Besides the letters from the Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General, do you have any information on who may have recommended or have been involved in your firing?
I don't.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Comey, let me begin by thanking you for your...
All right, well, since they're going to go into one of these lengthy intros, which they always seem to do during the questions, we're going to go ahead and take our commercial break right now. More with the former FBI Director James Comey's testimony when we come back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Welcome back, gang. We are going to go back to the Comey testimony in just a moment. Right now we have Senator, I think this is Susan Collins of Maine, who's a Republican. Oh, good. That's helpful. Our news partners at CNN put up that little graphic.
Yeah, I was wondering when they were going to do that. I was going to say, like, keep blotting out most of the senator's name.
Right. Well, we're going to get to the coverage here in just a second. One thing that I did want to mention that everybody needs to stay tuned, because after this segment, when this ends, I'm going to go ahead and give some commentary, help you understand a little bit of what's going on. So we'll do that after this. But right now we're going to go back to our live coverage via CNN.
Insulated from this kind of political pressure. And you've talked a bit today about that you were stunned by the president making the request. But my question to you is, later on, upon reflection, did you go to anyone at the Department of Justice and ask them to call the White House counsel's office and explain that the president had to have a far better understanding and appreciation of his role vis-a-vis the FBI?
In general, I did. I spoke to the Attorney General and I spoke to the new Deputy Attorney General, Mr. Rosenstein, when he took office, and explain my serious concern about the way in which the president is interacting, especially with the FBI. And I specifically, as I said in my testimony, told the Attorney General, it can't happen that you get kicked out of the room and the president talks to me. But look, in the room, but why didn't we raise the specific? It was of investigative interest to us to try and figure out, so what just happened with the president's request? So I would not have wanted to alert the White House that it had happened until we figured out, what are we going to do with this investigatively?
Your testimony was that you went to Attorney General Sessions and said, don't ever leave me alone with him again. Are you saying that you also told him that he had made a request that you let it go with regard to part of the investigation of Michael Flynn?
No, I specifically did not. I did not.
You mentioned that from your very first meeting with the president, you decided to write a memo memorializing the conversation. What was it about that very first meeting that made you write a memo when you had not done that with two previous presidents?
As I said, a combination of things. A gut feeling is an important overlay on but the circumstances that I was alone, the subject matter, and the nature of the person that I was interacting with, and my read of that person. And really just a gut feel laying on top of all of that, that this, it's going to be important to protect this organization, that I make records of this.
And finally, did you show copies of your memos to anyone outside of the Department of Justice?
Yes.
And to whom did you show copies?
I asked, President tweeted on Friday after I got fired that I better hope there's not tapes. I woke up in the middle of the night on Monday night, because it didn't dawn on me originally, that there might be corroboration for our conversation. There might be a tape. And my judgment was I needed to get that out into the public square. And so I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter. Didn't do it myself for a variety of reasons, but I asked him to because I thought that might prompt the appointment of a special counsel. And so I asked a close friend of mine to do it.
And was that Mr. Wittes?
No. No.
Who was that?
A good friend of mine who's a professor at Columbia Law School.
Thank you.
Senator Heinrich.
Mr. Comey, prior to January 27th of this year, have you ever had a one-on-one meeting or a private dinner with a president of the United States?
No. I met dinner, no. I had two one-on-ones with President Obama that I laid out in my testimony, once to talk about law enforcement issues, law enforcement and race, which was an important topic throughout for me and for the president, and then once very briefly for him to say goodbye.
Were those brief interactions?
No. The one about law enforcement and race and policing, we spoke for probably over an hour, just the two of us.
How unusual is it to have a one-on-one dinner with the president? Did that strike you as odd?
Yeah, so much so that I assumed there would be others, that he couldn't possibly be having dinner with me alone.
Do you have an impression that if you had found, if you had behaved differently in that dinner, and I am quite pleased that you did not, but if you had found a way to express some sort of expression of loyalty or given some suggestion that the Flynn criminal investigation might be pursued less vigorously, do you think you would have still been fired?
I don't know. It's impossible to say looking back. I don't know.
But you felt like those two things were directly relevant to your the kind of relationship that the president was seeking to establish with you?
Sure, yes. Yeah.
The president has repeatedly talked about the Russian investigation into the U.S. Or the Russia's involvement in the U.S. election cycle as a hoax and as fake news. Can you talk a little bit about what you saw as FBI director, and obviously only the parts that you can share in this setting, that demonstrate how serious this action actually was and why there was an investigation in the first place?
Yes, sir. There should be no fuzz on this whatsoever. The Russians interfered in our election during the 2016 cycle. They did it with purpose. They did it with sophistication. They did it with overwhelming technical efforts. And it was an active measures campaign driven from the top of that government. There is no fuzz on that. It is a high confidence judgment of the entire intelligence community. And the members of this committee have seen the intelligence. It's not a close call. That happened. That's about as unfake as you can possibly get and is very, very serious, which is why it's so refreshing to see a bipartisan focus on that, because this is about America, not about any particular party.
So that was,
Comey's primary concern the whole
Russian
time.
Government against this country.
Yes, sir.
Did the president, in any of those interactions that you've shared with us today, ask you what you should be doing or what our government should be doing or the intelligence community to protect America against Russian interference in our election system?
I don't recall a conversation like that.
Never?
No.
Do you find it odd?
Not with President Trump.
Right.
I attended a fair number of meetings on that with President Obama.
Do you find it odd that the president seemed unconcerned by Russia's actions in our election?
I can't answer that because I don't know what other conversations he had with other advisors or other intelligence community leaders. So I just don't know sitting here.
Did you have any interactions with the president that suggested he was taking that hostile action seriously?
I don't remember any interactions with the president other than the initial briefing on January the 6th. I don't remember, could be wrong, but I don't remember any conversations with him at all about that.
As you're very aware, it was only the two of you in the room for that dinner. You've told us that the president asked you to back off the Flynn investigation. The president told a reporter...
Not in that dinner.
Fair enough. Told the reporter he never did that. You've testified that the president asked for your loyalty in that dinner. The White House denies that. A lot of this comes down to who should we believe. Do you want to say anything as to why we should believe you?
Probably my mother raised me not to say things like this about myself, so I'm not going to. I think people should look at the whole body of my testimony. Mm-hmm. Because as I used to say to juries, that when I talked about a witness, you can't cherry pick it. You can't right. like these things he said, but on this, he's a dirty, rotten liar.
Right.
You got to take it all together. And I've tried to be open and fair and transparent and accurate. A really significant fact to me is, so why did he kick everybody out of the Oval Office? Why would you kick the Attorney General, the President, the Chief of Staff out to talk to me if it was about something else? And so that to me, as an investigator, is a very significant fact.
And as we look at testimony or as communication from both of you, we should probably be looking for consistency.
Well, in looking at any witness, you look at consistency, track record, demeanor, record over time, that sort of thing.
Thank you. So there are reports that the incoming Trump administration, either during the transition and or after the inauguration, attempted to set up a sort of backdoor communication channel with the Russian government using their infrastructure, their devices or facilities. What would be the risks, particularly for a transition, someone not actually in the office of the president yet, to setting up unauthorized channels with a hostile foreign government, especially if they were to evade our own American intelligence services?
I'm not going to comment on whether that happened in an open setting, but the risk is primary risk is obvious. You spare the Russians the cost and effort of having to break into our communications channels by using theirs. And so you make it a whole lot easier for them to capture all of your conversations and then to use those to the benefit of Russia against the United States.
The memos that you wrote, did you write all nine of them in a way that was designed to prevent them from needing classification?
No. And on a few of the occasions I sent emails to my chief of staff or others on some of the brief phone conversations that I recall. The first one was a classified briefing. Although it wasn't in a SCIF, it was in a conference room at Trump Tower. Mm-hmm. It was a classified briefing, and so I wrote that on a classified device. The one I started typing
gotcha.
In the car, that was a classified laptop that I started working on.
Any reason in a classified environment, in a SCIF, that this committee would not be appropriate to see those communications from, at least from your perspective as the author?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Blunt.
And what that means, and we'll go ahead and pipe that down, and what that means is that's going to be discussed in the closed-door hearing that will happen directly after this open testimony, and we're probably not going to know about that for quite some time. So, unfortunately, it looks like the details of some of the other memos that former Director James Comey has issued, we probably won't be seeing those for quite a while, if at all. Now, when it comes to this, we're going to go ahead and take a break here before I get into my commentary because we are a little bit late on the break. But there will be more in just a moment. We probably won't be returning to coverage. I'll just go ahead and give my testimony. So we will be right back in just a moment.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
My hopes of a future life are all founded upon the gospel of Christ. John Quincy Adams.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. Now, I do want to take a break from just our live stream of the coverage and give you some things to think about, maybe a way to unpack some of the things that we've heard today, because we've spent the entire show doing nothing but just listening to Director James Comey's testimony, which honestly is appropriate. That's the reason I spent all this time on it, because it is that important to hear directly from them and let you make your own decisions. However, I did want to offer a little bit of my own commentary on this. And by the way, I didn't want to interrupt the testimony too often, which is why throughout the entire event I was live tweeting. So if you do want to follow me on Twitter @PatriotPreach, and anytime we have one of these live events like this, you'll notice that I don't break in and give a soliloquy very often, but you can read my live tweets as coverage is going on. This is true whether I'm on the air or not. Anytime there's a big debate or a testimony, usually you can check out my feed at Patriot Preach and I'll be live tweeting the entire event. So let's look at some of the things. I think one of the most significant details that was revealed in this that really caught my attention, I don't know if people are going to pick up on this or not, but it really spoke to me. I want to say this was during Senator Rich's questioning, but one of the things that was brought to my attention that Comey brought up is he documented this particular conversation. We remember what happened with the memorandums. He had this conversation with the president. The president said, "I hope you can let Flynn go," in so many words. And the director was so freaked out by it, he immediately went to his car, started typing up a document, trying to remember everything that he had said, and typed up that memorandum that he issued in an official capacity to make sure it was done right in that moment in case he ever had to bring it to the public's attention. And he stated that part of the reasoning for that, the reason that he documented this particular conversation, was not just the situation, but also the nature of the person. The reason that is significant is because it is James Comey saying to the press, and whether or not this is a good thing or a bad thing, you can decide for yourself. I have my mind made up on it. But it was James Comey saying to the American people, yes, because it was Donald Trump, that's why it freaked me out. And I think that there's an important psychological thing going on here, because it is obvious based on this testimony that Trump did not trust Comey and Comey does not trust Trump. And part of the reason for that is when Donald Trump goes out and he characterizes things, his facts, whether he means to or not, are not always 100% accurate. Sometimes it's probably just him embellishing. Sometimes it is him flat out, you know, trying to paint himself in a more positive light. I think most of the time it's rather just President Trump embellishing the situation a little bit. But because Donald Trump has a habit of doing that, James Comey felt that it was necessary for him to go and document that as quickly as humanly possible and do it right then, so that he had more credibility when that happened. And part of the reason that he did that is specifically because the president asked him to clear the room. Here's why that's important. I'm certain, and honestly, I don't believe there was any malicious intent behind this, as James Comey ascribes to Donald Trump. Keep in mind, James Comey has spent all of his time in Washington around people that are politically savvy, that are politicians. Frankly, I don't think that Trump was intending to do anything wrong. Granted, I'm consistent on this. I don't think intention means that you are absolved of any wrongdoing, because ignorance of the law does not mean that you get to do whatever the heck you want to just because you can say, oh, well, I didn't know about that. If you don't believe me, try speeding and tell the police officer you didn't know that the speed limit was 35 and you were doing 70. So that doesn't clear you of any wrongdoing. However, James Comey, because this is wildly strange and unusual for the president to specifically request people to exit the room in favor of having the room to himself so that he can talk to someone, that is what painted his perception of what Donald Trump was asking him to do. He said in the testimony it admitted, and I think he's being forthcoming with this, as forthcoming as he can possibly be, that when Donald Trump asked him to do that, he perceived that, and Marco Rubio did a great job of pointing this out, that he perceived that what was going on is that the president was essentially requesting that he drop the investigation to Flynn. I don't know that that's necessarily what Trump was doing. It's hard to ascribe motive, as Marco Rubio pointed out, and where he's saying, I hope that you will be able to let this go. That's not exactly the same as giving a direct order. And perhaps, and we're going to look into this ourselves, perhaps that is the reason that Flynn specifically, not necessarily the Russian investigation as a whole, perhaps that is the reason that when you're talking about Donald Trump and his reaction to it, that at least a contributing factor to why James Comey was let go as the FBI director, a decision that I think both politically and from a practical standpoint was a massive, massive misstep by the Trump administration. However, and looking into all of this, when we're looking through this testimony and what Comey did, he paints a picture of, this is something that weirded me out. No president has ever done this with me. A president in general wants to keep at least a few people in the room to corroborate a story. It's very, very rare to have a one-on-one between, I don't know that it's ever happened in recent history with the exception of, like Comey said, the one-on-one he had with President Obama, which happened once in his tenure as the FBI director, to talk about some law enforcement. And even then, I think that there was a known record of that. Now, when it came to a brief meeting to say goodbye, that's not all that unusual. But to actually discuss a matter, and here's the thing. It was not like Donald Trump called James Comey into the Oval Office to speak with him. It was he called James Comey, Sessions, and a few other people in, and then he asked everybody to leave the room. That's significant because there were people there, and then Donald Trump wanted to have a one-on-one with Comey directly. And he said, I think that Attorney General Sessions knew that that was a bad idea and that that was going to come back to potentially bite Trump in the butt. That's why Jeff Sessions was kind of sticking around, not in so many words, saying, Mr. President, I really kind of need to be here for this. And so Sessions, in an attempt to help Comey out. So what I'm getting from this is that Comey, because he spends all his time around politicians in Washington and because he is he's the head of the FBI, which is an investigative community, he tends to see misconduct in the slightest misstep. And because of that, I think he blew the magnitude of that out of proportion just a little bit when he asked that he said that he hopes he can let the Flynn investigation go. I don't think that what Trump was saying to him in so many words is, because if you don't, you might get fired. I don't think that's what the president was saying. I don't think that's what he intended. But because Comey perceived it that way, he wanted to memorialize this conversation, make sure there was a record of it in case he ever needed to use it later, which was a smart move.
I actually thought that's, and I'm being serious, I thought that was the implication of his, hope you'll let this go. So you and I disagree on that.
I don't think that it had anything to do with his firing. I think that decision, because keep in mind, this conversation happened much earlier. That conversation came later, and I still think to this day that the primary reason, I'm not saying that that wasn't a contributing factor, but I think that the primary reason that James Comey is no longer the FBI director is because of the wiretapping claim. Because Donald Trump specifically asked, and again, the guy's a CEO. He's not used to having subordinates that, both for legal reasons and as a matter of principle, will not do what he asked them to do. When he asked James Comey, hey, can you back me up on this wiretapping campaign? And James Comey's just kind of looking at him like, no, really can't, because there's no evidence to support it. You see, a lot of these things, at least in my mind, are Donald Trump having absolutely no experience and no idea what he's doing. And because of that, he asked for personal favors that come off as a more serious suggestion, especially when you're dealing with somebody who's in law enforcement and whose job is to oversee anything that might be going wrong in the government, including your boss. And so because Trump is having a hard time understanding that, and because, again, Donald Trump is a consummate narcissist who constantly wants people around him to be yes men and to be loyal to his every wish.
He's paranoid, too.
Well, that as well. But my point in all of that is, because Donald Trump has that demeanor, it sets people that are in government, like James Comey, on edge. And because of that, there was already a contentious relationship between the two of them. And it came to a head, and Donald Trump made a politically not smart decision to let go of James Comey, especially at the height of the Russia investigation. So whether or not Trump fired James Comey because of the Russia investigation, I'm not saying that didn't have a factor to play in it, especially considering what the president said directly afterward, which was monumentally stupid to admit to the press. But what I'm saying in all this is, I think that this was a series of events, and really the straw that broke the camel's back was James Comey saying, no, Mr. President, I'm not going to corroborate your story about wiretapping because there's not any truth to it. So that being said, I don't think there's any criminal intention, and there's absolutely nothing in here that suggests that Donald Trump was trying to skew the Russia investigation one way or the other when making this decision on Comey. One thing that I did want to bring up before we go, and we do have to go to a break here in just a second. The last thing I wanted to bring up before the Star-Spangled Sermon is there's something else that we learned, which really is not new information, but I was glad to see it solidified in this testimony, is that James Comey, beyond the shadow of a doubt and with evidence to back it up, says, yes, Russia did try to influence our election. However, it was a failed attempt. We have seen no evidence whatsoever that not even a single vote was directly changed because of the result of the Russians trying to get in. So it's an attempt. And we need to hold Russia accountable for that. But it is a failed attempt. Now, just because you did not get the money out of the safe does not mean you didn't try to rob the bank. So I'm not saying that that makes it okay with Russia. I'm still incredibly skeptical of Russia and consider them our biggest geopolitical threat. But what I'm saying in that is Donald Trump has perceived this entire time that anybody who believes that Russia was involved in the election is somehow saying to him, Mr. President, you're an illegitimate president. That you're not, that's not what James Comey's saying. That's not what James Comey believes. That's not what anybody who has looked at this seriously believes. Donald Trump won the election fair and square. He is the duly elected president of the United States. And believing that Russia tried to involve themselves in our election and skew it one way or the other does absolutely nothing to change that. You can simultaneously believe that Donald Trump is the rightful president of the United States and also believe that the Russians tried to influence the election. And that's what we should take away from this. All right, Star Spangled Sermon coming up next. Searching for shelter again and again. Against the wind. Little something against.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Philippians 1:21. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Very quickly, before we do go to the Star-Spangled Sermon, did want to mention this. The Alabama FFA State Convention is going on right now, and we are going to have coverage of that tomorrow, sort of a wrap-up of the week of events. If you've been downtown at all this week, you've noticed all the kids walking around in 100-degree weather in thick corduroy jackets. They're not crazy. There's a reason. That's why.
I wonder.
So, yeah.
Seriously, they have a couple today. I said, that's a lot of young people in town. Are they not in school?
There's about summer, but there's about 2,000.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. There's about 2,000 high school students, 2,000 to 3,000. I'm not sure exactly what the count is this year. I'll try to get that for you tomorrow.
We will have
coverage from the convention floor. So we won't actually be in studio. We'll be on the convention floor for that. All right. Now on to the Star-Spangled Sermon, and my time is quickly evaporating, so I'm going to give you the abridged version of this. Sometimes there are profound truths found in the lesser-known parts of the Bible, and this is one such occasion. We all know the birth story of Christ. Even non-Christians at least have a vague idea of what the birth story of Christ is. But just a few verses later, 8 days after he's born, we see Christ being brought to the temple to undergo his circumcision, which was the custom of all Jewish men back then. So 8 days after his birth, this is a story that not as many people know, but I think it's very significant. Luke 2:25-26. And there was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simeon. And this man was righteous and devout, looking for consolation of Israel. And the Holy Spirit was upon him. And it had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not see death before he had seen the Lord's Christ. Now notice what we know about this man. We don't know a whole lot about Simeon. Not a lot of details. We know his name. But can you imagine the Bible saying this about you? The Holy Spirit is upon you, and you are righteous before God? I mean, not much is said about him, but what is said is profound. And I can't imagine being bragged upon in the scripture like this. But something else I notice is interesting. He has been looking for the consolation of Israel. He's been looking for Israel to be restored to what it was because he senses that something is amiss in his nation, that Israel is lost. They've gotten off track. They're no longer being the people that God wanted them to be. And he wants to see his people saved desperately. And this prophecy is issued to him that you will not die before you see the Christ, that you will live to see God's Savior come into this world. And then in Luke 27:32, And he came in the spirit to the temple. And when his parents, talking about Jesus here, and when the parents brought the child Jesus to carry him into the custom of law, then took him into his arms and blessed God, saying, "Now, Lord, you are releasing your bondservant to depart in peace, according to your word. For mine eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in the presence of all people, a light of revelation to the Gentiles, and the glory of your people Israel." Simeon has seen God's Savior. He has seen Jesus Christ now. He's got to hold him in his arms. And he is thrilled, overjoyed, as we all would be, to get to see God's salvation of his people. But what's interesting here is he has not seen the completion of God's salvation. None of this matters unless Jesus goes to the cross and dies. So Simeon's not seen that. All he's seen is the potential. He's seen baby Jesus. And yet he's saying he's willing to die in peace. Why is that? Because Simeon has faith that God is going to keep his promise. That now that he's seen God's salvation, he has faith that the plan of salvation is going to be carried out and Jesus is going to save his people and be a light of revelation to the Gentiles. We all need to have faith like Simeon's, that we don't have to see the completion or know every single detail to trust that God is going to keep his promises. Stay the course, friends.
The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.